It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Wildfires in and around Los Angeles have now been burning for more than a week, and they're still far from being contained.
As of this morning, the fires have killed at least 25 people. They've also destroyed more than 12,000 structures and burned more than 60 square miles of land.
While Southern California may be uniquely susceptible to wildfires, they can happen just about anywhere, including here in Wisconsin. Almost 7,500 acres burned in Douglas and Bayfield counties in the 2013 German Road Fire. And Wisconsin was the site of the deadliest wildfire in American history, the Peshtigo Fire of 1871, which killed more than 1,500 people.
Nearly half of Wisconsin's towns, cities, and villages are described as being at high or very high risk of destructive wildfires, according to the Wisconsin DNR.
So what can we do to minimize the risk of wildfires in our own communities and minimize the damage when they do happen? Catherine Cooley is a wildfire prevention specialist from the Wisconsin DNR. Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
When people think Wisconsin and disaster, they might say, oh, tornado, flood, snow, ice, maybe drought. Make the case that we should have, in many parts of the state, wildfires on our radar.
Well, obviously, we're all watching the news very closely, and it hits home for a lot of us, and especially in the fire community. Spring is wildfire season in Wisconsin, kind of a big misconception. You know, folks don't realize that we have fires, wildfires here in Wisconsin. In fact, we have over 1,000 fires every year, and we suppress, 2,600 to 3,000 acres every year. So fires do exist here in the Great Lakes region.
And you mentioned spring, wildfire season in Wisconsin. What's going on in our conditions that make that ripe for a wildfire?
Yeah, people think, summer, it's hot, that's when fires are going to happen. But in Wisconsin, it's right when that snow cover disappears prior to vegetation greening up. So we typically, in a normal fire year, it'll start in the southern part of the state, and it kind of progressively moves north as that snow cover disappears, when you have all that dead and dry vegetation. And then that coupled with human activity. So 98% of our fires in Wisconsin are caused by people. Folks are outside cleaning up around their yards and choosing to burn materials. And then the weather is obviously a very important factor. So on those dry, windy, low humidity days, that's when we tend to see those sparks.
You've got a resource at the DNR, a list of communities around the state by county and then alphabetical by community within that, that shows areas of concern. People can go and see that. What makes a community show up as red on that list? I was looking at it. There's a fair amount of red there.
Yeah, it is shocking to read. We have over 500 some communities at risk. And basically what that means is that there's a lot of different factors that go into that. We have a lot of very intelligent people that look at kind of the soil, how the drainage index, which is how soils are made up, the topography, the vegetation. Vegetation is a big component of how we identify those communities at risk. So when you see areas of, the sandy soils coupled with pine country, so very conifer, pine trees, jack pine, those are pockets of really high fire intensity probability. So we look at also, we're getting more into some of how fire behaves in these communities as well. So in those pine areas, the fires can actually, move up into the crowns, and those can be very difficult to suppress. So that's what elevates that fire risk in those communities.
We're talking to Catherine Cooley, wildfire prevention specialist from the Wisconsin DNR, talking about the risks of wildfires here in the state and what we can do to prevent them and prevent their spread. And let's turn to that now, Catherine. Before we talk about stopping the spread of wildfires, let's talk about stopping the spark of wildfires. What should people in their homes, their businesses, their recreation be thinking about? What kind of precautions should we be taking?
Well, it's kind of a three-tiered approach is how I like to think of it. So we first off need to prevent fires from happening. We need to prepare for them because they can happen without, our no fault of our own, right? And then we also need to plan for them. So, but preventing is my wheelhouse. That's what I do for a living. Is my focus is trying to reduce the number of wildfires, human-caused unwanted fire. So knowing the fire danger, getting burning permits, you know, finding alternatives to burning. And then on those elevated fire days, really, you know, using you folks, the media, to inform the public and social media, and then also, you know, reporting fires early so we can get to them and suppress them and keep them small. Then on the preparing side, you know, it's, you know, making your home defensible from a wildfire, you know, choosing, you know, to rake around your yard, cleaning out fire, your rain gutters from pine needles. That's where those embers land. That's what can cause your home to burn down. It's not the big flame front that comes through. It's the small things around your house, stacking your wood pile next to your structures. And then, you know, thinking about it on a greater scale, the planning effort, right? So, you know, as a community, if you live in a fire prone area, we talked about it earlier, those large scale communities, you know, that you're more susceptible. So thinking about, you know, having, you know, ordinances or codes, you know, volunteers, firefighters coming in and, you know, knowing how to get in, have a fire truck come into your home. If you can't get in, they're likely not going to suppress or help the fire protect your house.
And you mentioned communities getting involved in this, and there are many communities around the state that have community wildfire protection plans. And I believe the DNR hopes that more communities get those. What kind of things go into making that wildfire protection plan?
So it's a community-wide effort. So we engage a lot of our partners. Within the DNR, we have what's called Wildland Urban Interface Specialists. And then we also have our foresters in each county. And we engage with those communities. We work with the local fire department, emergency management, all the partners that make up these communities. So one of the main focuses is going to be on fuels reduction. So that's where we put a lot of our efforts. And that's, again, creating defensible space around, you know, homes and communities, setting up brush collection sites, neighborhood brush chipping or pickup, neighbors helping neighbors, you know, folks, you know, may not be able to do the work themselves around the house. So it's kind of a neighbor to neighbor kind of assistance. And then also through education, you know, targeted mailings, you know, yeah, postcard, hey, did you get a burn permit this year? Or here are some things you can do around your home to prevent a fire from sparking a wildfire. And then also, you know, planning, again, walking around the house, determining what are the things around your home that create your fire risk. And then also, you know, thinking about things that, like evacuation planning. So if a fire does encroach your community, how are you going to get out? So things like that.
Now, if somebody's listening and realizing they're in one of these communities where wildfires are a risk and they don't have a community wildfire protection plan, how does somebody, whether a citizen, local leader, what have you, how does somebody get the ball rolling on creating that plan?
So I think, you know, the first thing I would recommend is to look at your own home, look at your own property, take the steps, talk to a local forester or your local fire department and ask those questions. What are some things that I can do to prevent a fire from happening on my property? So it really needs to start with that local landowner. And then, you know, again, work with those. If you have a spark plug in your community, you know, take the initiative yourself and, you know, go to a town meeting, bring these things up, have conversations, engage your neighborhood. If maybe it's through a homeowners association or a lake association. So you got to start small and then gradually get bigger. You need buy-in, because if your home is defensible and your neighbor's is not, you're still at risk. So again, start small and then start to get bigger working with those partners.
And something I noticed on the DNR website, we're talking about homes, but also do you talk about that sandy, piney land? Well, that might be somebody's cabin. And, you know, they're up there a few times, handful of times through the summer, and they may notice, oh, we got those pine needles on the roof and in the gutter. We got to deal with that sometime. Put that at top of mind for people who have those vacation homes and dealing with that to make sure they don't do it too late.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess the biggest thing is preventing fires. So a lot of times what we'll see in these seasonal parts of the state is we have what's called weekend warriors. They'll come up and clean up around their yard and they choose to burn those materials. So obviously the first thing we need to do is find alternatives to burning. So clean up around your yard. There are, you know, transfer sites. You can leave the brush or pine needles, you know, away from your home in the woods for wildlife habitat to enjoy. So think of other ways to get rid of those materials. Now, if the ground is completely snow covered, for the duration of your burn, you can burn some of those materials. That is going to be the safest option if you choose to burn some of those materials.
And then taking care of that roof, because in my head, I can picture having seen cabins with all those pine needles, dried leaves on top. And if you think about that in wildfire terms, that's a big worry. Briefly, encourage people to deal with that sooner than later.
So as we're watching kind of the Southern California stuff too, you know, one of the big messages that they're getting across is, it's, you know, these embers that come out from the flame front. So, you know, it's not the big, you know, flame front that's coming through, that's taking these homes down. It's these embers that are landing, like you said, in the gutters and the pine needles, and then it's taking the structure down. So it's just really got to focus on that small stuff. And really, if you want to prioritize your time, have that clean in the spring, because that's when we're most vulnerable to fire.
And what kind of resources do you have at the DNR that people can check out?
You know, obviously we have a ton of information on our website. Go to the DNR, you know, homepage and search fire. We have things organized, like I said, kind of that preventing, preparing and planning for fire. Talk to your local fire officials too. Visit the local fire department, pancake breakfast to have those conversations, go to those open houses, engage with your local fire department and DNR fire officials. We're happy to help.
Catherine, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
That's Catherine Cooley, wildfire prevention specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. We talked to her today about wildfire prevention and preparedness here in Wisconsin. And hey, have you been affected by a wildfire here in the state? Were you hit by that German Road fire about 12 years ago? You could share your story, your experience, maybe lessons learned. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.
On Wisconsin Today, the director of the Center for Journalism Ethics talks about the challenges of crowdsourcing crime solving.
With the platforms and tools that we have now, it's very hard to figure out why someone is doing something and how reliable their information can be.
The ethics of internet sleuthing, that's next on WPR News.